Want to grab a Bible, which should be in the pocket behind you, and turn to page 71, which you should find the tail end of, called this series, The Gospel of Exodus. We're looking at the good news in the book of Exodus, that there is salvation seen in the book of Exodus. This is the story of how God, using Moses, led the enslaved people of Israel out of Egypt through 40 long years in the wilderness into conquering Canaan, the promised land. This is a true story, and yet as well as being a true story, it also parallels the saving good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Well, we're what, about 5 or 6 weeks into this series. So where have we reached in our story? Oh man, I needed a pool cue. I've got a pen. Haven't prepared. Richard, would you point where that's Egypt. If are any of you really, really rubbish at geography, that right, okay. There's a country called Egypt which existed then and still exists now. In fact, it's never not existed, is it? And so they've left Egypt, they've crossed the Red Sea, or the very tip of the Red Sea, and they're now travelling down, following the path of the Red Sea, and are thus far stuck pretty near to the coast. So it says so this is about 6 weeks after they've left, Egypt. So, Exodus 15, verse 22. Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur. For 3 days they travelled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they couldn't drink the water because it was bitter. So the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What are we to drink?" Then Moses cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. He threw it into the water, and the water became fit to drink. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs, 70 palm trees, and they camped there near the water. I should say also where they're going. For those who are really geographically inept, Richard, could you please point to where Canaan is, where we would today call the south end of Gaza? Yeah, that's it, around there. So they're going into basically where it says Salt Sea, Dead Sea, in that area. Ashkelon, Gaza. Gaza obviously still exists. That's present Israel. At the time it was called Canaan. God called it the Promised Land because it was where they were promised, where they were going to head to. So Exodus 16 verse 1. So they've just been near an oasis. Not the band. Has anyone ever been to a proper oasis? Like in the desert? What's it like? Is it really cool? I mean literally. Yeah. Oh, is it? Okay, but shady and nice. Anyone else? Am I the only one who's jealous? Paul has. Where was that? Nice. That must, in fact, actually, I would have thought an oasis in Qatar must be very nice. Anyway, nice. Nice. I've never been to one. 16 verse 1. The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. So this is a mere 6 weeks having been freed from slavery in Egypt. How would you be if this were you? If 6 weeks before you had been a slave in Egypt and you've been liberated, you have been freed. Surely 6 weeks after the fact, if your nation has been in slavery for several hundred years and you're free, 6 weeks after the fact, surely you would still be buzzing. Let's see how they're getting on. So, how are God's people getting on in the desert? Well, after Marah, after the oasis at Elim, the grumbling continues. So, verse 2. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. But you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death." What? 6 weeks ago, they had been slaves. For the whole community, it says here, the Bible only says it's about 600,000 men. So we're looking at about 1 million whinging people, whinging at Moses and Aaron. For Israel, this was utterly ungrateful madness. And it was insanity for several reasons. Number one, Moses and Aaron weren't leading them. God was. Exodus 13 tells them that by day the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light. So God was leading them. Not Moses and Aaron. They had nothing to do with it. They were following the pillar, just a pillar of fire and of smoke and fire, just or cloud and fire, just as the rest of the people were. Secondly, Israel knew where they were going. Well, similarly, in Exodus 13, Moses said to Israel, "The Lord will bring you into the land he swore to your ancestors to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey." They knew that they were going to Canaan. And the last few months must have made it obviously apparent that God had a plan. There'd been the plagues, miraculous plagues in Egypt, which had affected the Egyptians but hadn't affected the Israelites. The way they'd crossed the Red Sea, that's what you did last week, Si. The way they crossed the Red Sea, such an impressive miracle, they made a film about it. And sometimes when you see Moses and you think about him, you do think Charlton Heston, don't you? Yeah, you know you do. And the fact that God had miraculously cleaned, made the bitter water drinkable at Marah. And this is the thing that gets me. They almost certainly had food. I refuse to believe that they were starving at this point in the desert. In Exodus 12, we're told that they took large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds, out of Egypt. I think it is utterly inconceivable that they had eaten all of their stocks within 6 weeks. Nowhere in this passage that we're about to read does it imply that the Israelites were hungry or that they were starving. They were simply grumbling. Yes, they were in a place which wouldn't have been easy or fun. Have I been in a desert? Have I? Yeah, have I? Yeah, I've not been in this wilderness. I've been in the one in Israel. I mean, it is pretty hot. And, you know, obviously it was nice to have a can of Coke. But but they knew where they were heading. And 6 weeks ago, they had been slaves. Israel had quickly become ungrateful and grumbling. They were acting like spoilt, cheap teenagers. Who knows what it's like to have a spoilt teenager in the house? Everyone should put their hands up, because at one point it would have been you. God had made his promise to Israel. The nation was heading to the promised land. Therefore, God had a plan to feed the Israelites in the desert. God always keeps his promises. So Israel needn't have worried, because God had a plan. It didn't need them grumbling to get God to act. Whether they were joyful and praising or full of miserable groans, God would feed them regardless. So what would God do? Charlie's going to come and read us the rest of the chapter.
Then the Lord said to Moses, "I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day they are to prepare what they bring in, and that it is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days." So Moses and Aaron said to all the Israelites, "In the evening you will know that it was the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, and in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we that you should grumble against us?" Moses also said, "You will know that it was the Lord when he gives you meat to eat in the evening and all the bread you want in the morning, because he has heard your grumbling against him. Who are we? You are not grumbling against us, but against the Lord." Then Moses told Aaron, "Say to the entire Israelite community, 'Come before the Lord, for he has heard your grumbling.'" While Aaron was speaking to the whole Israelite community, they looked towards the desert, and there was the glory of the Lord appearing in the cloud. The Lord said to Moses, "I have heard the grumblings of the Israelites. Tell them, 'At twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you will be filled with bread, and then you will know that I am the Lord your God.'" That evening, quail came and covered the camp, and in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the dew was gone, thin flakes like frost on the ground appeared on the desert floor. When the Israelites saw it, they said to each other, "What's this?" For they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Each one is to gather as much as they need. Take an omer for each person you have in your tent." The Israelites did as they were told. Some gathered much, some gathered little. And when they measured it by the omer, the one who gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. each one had gathered just as much as they needed. Then Moses said to them, "No one is to keep any of it until the morning." However, some of them paid no attention to Moses and kept part of it until the morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. So Moses was angry with them. Each morning, everyone gathered as much as they needed, and when the sun grew hot, it melted away. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, two omers per person, and the leaders of the community came and reported this to Moses. He said to them, "This is what the Lord commanded. Tomorrow is to be a day of Sabbath rest and holy Sabbath to the Lord. So bake what you want to bake and boil what you want to boil. Save whatever is left and keep it until morning." So they saved it until morning, and Moses, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink or get maggots in it. "Eat it today," Moses said, "because today is a Sabbath to the Lord. You will not find any of it on the ground today. 6 days you're to gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will not be any. Nevertheless, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather it, but they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, "How long will you refuse to keep my commands and my instructions? Bear in mind that the Lord has given you the Sabbath. That is why on the sixth day he gives you bread for 2 days. Everyone is to stay where they are on the seventh day. No one is to go out." So the people rested on the seventh day. The people of Israel called the bread manna. It was white like coriander and seed, and tasted like wafers made with honey. Moses said, "This is what the Lord has commanded. Take an omer of manna and keep it for the generations to come, so they can see the bread I gave you to eat in the wilderness when I brought you out of Egypt." So Moses said to Aaron, "Take a jar and put an omer of manna in it. Then place it before the Lord to be kept for the generations to come." As the Lord commanded Moses, Aaron put the manna with the tablets of the covenant law that it might be preserved. The Israelites ate manna for 40 years until they came to the land that was settled. They ate manna until they reached the border of Canaan.
So we see that God gives them gifts of manna, which is a bread-like food. I can't be the only person here who's wondered in the past what manna would be like. Yeah, you haven't, you? All right. And quails. Anyone ever had a quail? I ain't. You have? Of course you have, Edward. How small? I don't know if I've ever seen a quail. Tiny. Nice. And which are small birds. With these gifts, God displays abundant grace and mercy, like that of a good father with a naughty child. God displays grace. God gives Israel what they do not deserve. So whingers are getting free food. And God displays mercy. God doesn't give Israel what they do deserve with their moaning, which frankly is a clip round the ear. Israel receives manna every morning, 6 days of the week, with enough left over on the sixth day so they don't have to glean on the seventh day, the Sabbath. What grace. They had food without the effort of farming. And I think for us, we don't realise what the extent of the grace that is, because, you know, the most I ever have to do is open a tin of beans, and I think that's effort. But Israel will not be able to complain about hunger whilst travelling to Canaan. In the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 7, Jesus asked, "Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him?" We see God acting here as a loving Father and Lord, graciously providing for his children. Manna was a grace gift. They talk about the food that they'd received in Egypt. They were slaves' rations. But here, and it was slaves' rations just to keep them fit for another day's servitude to their slave masters. But this food that they're getting in the wilderness is a gift of grace from God. However, manna was also a test. So God says to Moses, "I will test them to see if they will follow my instructions." Manna has rules. They're to collect it 6 mornings out of 7. They're to collect just enough for their needs. They're not allowed to be greedy, and they're not allowed to keep it overnight, apart from on the sixth day when they can keep enough for the seventh day, the Sabbath. Some people disobeyed, so some gathered much, some gathered little. But when they measured it, the one who'd gathered much did not have too much, and the one who gathered little did not have too little. Everyone had gathered just as much as they needed. Some paid no attention to Moses. They kept it until the morning, but it was full of maggots and began to smell. And some went out on the seventh day anyway to gather it, but they found that there was nothing there. Now, God could have led the people of Israel really quite quickly to Canaan, to the promised land, but he didn't. They could have followed the coastal route. So up there where it says, cheers Richard, where it says the wilderness of Shur, that was a highway 3,000 years ago, which we think was called the way of the Philistines, because frankly it led to the Philistines. God could have led them that way. When they crossed the Red Sea, they could have turned left and they'd have been in the promised land in a couple of weeks. But they didn't. When they crossed the Red Sea, they turned right and went south. God knew what he was doing. This wasn't a mistake. This wasn't an accident. God was testing Israel, his chosen people, forging them into a people who would be ready at his chosen appointed time to conquer the promised land. And manna is a part of the forging of that nation. This is the first mention in the Bible of a Sabbath rest, of a rest every 7 days for humans. Obviously, God had one at creation, but this is the first time it's on the seventh day in creation, but this is the first time it's mentioned for humans. A Sabbath rest for God's people, a holy day of rest on the seventh day of the week. So as well as being a life-giving, sustaining gift, manna is a test, and it is going to be a long test. Israel doesn't yet realise that this is going to be a 40-year journey. At their current pace, the Israelites, and at this point this actually includes Moses as well, would have anticipated between a 4- and 6-month trip from Egypt to Canaan. However, God knew that Israel was going to be in the wilderness for a long time. Has anyone ever been to Sinai? Have you? Did you go to the... Both were correct. St. Catherine's Monastery, Burning Bush Place, yes. Did you go there? Oh, I'm really moderately jealous. Is jealousy a sin in that regard? I'm really glad you were able to go. Jen, well, I'm really, really jealous. Jen went before we met, and then when we went to Sinai about 5 years ago, blooming terrorism, we weren't allowed out of the hotel. I wasn't able to go. I would, yeah. What's it like? Is it really wildernessy? But not much to eat. You should have gone to Sharm el Sheikh as a McDonald's. Anyway, it's going to be a long test. They were going to be in the wilderness for a long time. There isn't much food in the desert. But throughout their 40-year journey, Israel would never go hungry. They would never be gluttonously full, but they would be satisfied. They would just have enough. So it says in the last verse that Charlie read, the Israelites ate manna for 40 years until they came to a land that was settled. They ate manna until they reached the border of Canaan. Israel was one nation, led by one God, and sustained by one food. So what can we take from this passage? The first point where God has really spoken to me about this is don't grumble. Israel needed to appreciate what they were saved from and what they were saved for. They released from slavery, released from bondage, and were being led by a loving God, and they were travelling, not as fast as they would have liked, they were travelling to a glorious home. But Israel seems to have so quickly forgotten, this is 6 weeks after they left slavery, so quickly forgotten what God had done for them and had taken their eyes off God and his plan. And as soon as they did that, they started to grumble. But how different are we? As I said, this passage powerfully spoke to me when I started looking at it. Because of late, I've been a grumbler. My wife's told you, hasn't she? I've been at home. I've just, for like, you know when you moan about nothing, but at the same time, you're always moaning? And looking back now, 5-6 weeks ago, and I'd been moaning miserable for months. I couldn't say there wasn't anything. I was just grumbling. So I would say for believers, don't grumble because God has a plan. God knows what he's doing. Some people love to grumble and it's insidious. Insidious means it proceeds in a gradual and subtle way, but with harmful effects. That's true in our personal lives. My moaning was bringing me... Well, it weren't bringing me down. I was quite happy moaning. It really was bringing Jen down. And also, it's true within our churches. God has not created his body to bicker. I have quite significant joint problems. My ankles and shoulders dislocate. They've been repaired. And for the first few minutes of every day, when I stand up and move around, you must hear me from a mile away. Because I crick and I crack, my body groans, I sound like a bag of marbles shaking around for the first few minutes until my body wakes up. That is not healthy. That's not normal. Grumbling is negative. No one has ever been heard to say, "Oh, that Paul is a great chap, isn't he? He's such a lovely grumbler." Exodus is a true living metaphor. So God caused this story to happen in part as a lesson to future generations, us who've come afterwards. So as Israel left slavery in Egypt and journeyed to the promised land, so too we, as disciples of Jesus Christ, have been freed from slavery to sin. So that's all the rubbish that messes up our lives and distances us from God. And we are on a path to glory. But just as Israel had to wander in the wilderness before reaching Canaan to reach our promised home, we have to walk through our own wilderness, and that is life. Like Israel in the wilderness, sometimes God will lead us to oasis, a time of rest, of peace, and of joy. But at times God will lead us to a desert, a challenging time of hardship. But God will lead us. We're never abandoned. And the test is, how will we react? Even though I know pretty well the story of Israel's wanderings in the wilderness, how often do I fall foul to just that same sin of taking my eyes off God and grumbling, of willfully taking my eyes off God and forgetting what it is I've been saved from and what it is I've been saved for, to just sit and grumble in my own personal wilderness? It's a lack of faith which robs me of my joy and causes pain to myself and to those around me. That leads on to the next point. Slavery is never better than freedom. The quote from Tim Keller, which has been projected over the last couple of weeks, but I don't really know how projectors work, which salvation is the rescue from the misery and slavery of serving anything in your life as being more important than God. Israel was heading to the promised land. Soon after this, 12 spies would break away from the group, go into Canaan, spend a month there, and they would come back holding a bunch of grapes so large that it took two of them to carry it on a pole between them. And they would report, "We went into the promised land in which you sent us, and it is flowing with milk and honey." The promised land was real. Slavery and bondage were not better than freedom, even though the present now that they found themselves in the wilderness was not the most fun place to be. It was tough. And that's as true for us as we journey in life through life with Christ as it was for the Israelites. Life in service to Jesus will not always be easy. If you've been a Christian for more than 10 minutes, you probably realise that fact. At times we will find ourselves stumbling about, going around in circles in our own personal wildernesses. But even in the toughest times, it is better than slavery. It is better than living without Christ, because it is freedom. With Christ, in a relationship with Jesus Christ, we have joy, we have purpose, and importantly, we have a future. We know where we're going. But what happened when manna lost its wow factor? The first morning when, well, we know, they turn out, what is it? Manna, what is it? They don't know what it was the first morning. It would have been, wow, free food. This is absolutely fantastic. But what would have it been like? I'd say it's Chugg's Red. They ate this stuff every day. Yeah, every day for 40 years. What would it have been like on day 2001 after 5 years in the wilderness? Or a morning 10,001, 27 years into a 40-year journey? Well, Numbers tells us that 1 year after the passage Charlie read, some Israelites began to moan again. The rabble, because it's Numbers chapter 11, the rabble began to crave other food. And again, the Israelites started wailing and said, if only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost and the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions and garlics. But now we've lost our appetite. We never see anything but this manna. To the Christians here, I ask, do we remember to marvel in the miracle of God's grace as freshly now as we did on the morning after we turned to Jesus Christ? Manna was as much a miracle of life-giving grace, of nourishment, on day 14,000, right near the end of the 40-year journey, as it was on day one. Do we still thrill in the forgiveness we've received through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, or are we more like the rabble in the wilderness? I know far too often from myself, I'm more like the rabble in the wilderness. Have we taken our eyes off God and forgotten what we've been saved from and what we've been saved for? We need to remember what, or rather who, sustains us. That is Jesus. And remain, keep focused on him, even in the naff times. In the Gospel of John, Jesus said, this is John chapter 6, Jesus said, I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which anyone may eat and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. It says in John 6 that the people Jesus was speaking to didn't understand. It says they grumbled. And after this, many followers deserted Jesus. Now, I did Bible Gateway, where you can just type in a word. I wanted to see how often the word grumble, grumbler, grumbling occurs in, and obviously this isn't in Hebrew or Greek that the Bible was written in, but in the New International Versions, which you're reading now. And I think the term grumble or grumbling, grumbler only occurs, I think it's 12 times. Should have written it down, really. But not many times in the Bible as a whole. But there are, the bulk of them are in the chapter in Exodus, or 15, 16, which we've read this morning, and the chapter in John 6. If we know Jesus, the living bread, how can we grumble? How could we ever get bored or unexcited by the good news we've received? It's good news with Jesus that's good enough to beat the power of death. So let us pray that we learn lessons from the Israelites in the wilderness and from those so-called disciples that deserted Jesus. Jesus Christ is the living bread that saves us, sustains us, and keeps us going even in the toughest times as we journey to our own promised land. Jesus does this because he makes the weak strong. He brings joy to the brokenhearted, he frees slaves, and he satisfies those in our own wildernesses, just like the manna sustained the Israelites. Let's pray. Holy God, thank you for the mercy and grace that we have received from you. Thank you for the mercy that we receive. Thank you that, you know, we know what goes on in our own personal hearts. I think we know in our hearts what we, if we were to judge ourselves, what we would deserve. And yet, we receive mercy. And we receive grace. We get what we don't deserve. We get forgiveness. We have hope of a sure and certain future, and we have an eternal, lifelong relationship with the living God. Please, Lord God, please help us to keep our eyes focused on you, just to not be a grumbling and whining people. Please help us to constantly remember what we have been saved from, and importantly, what we are saved for. Please, Lord, you know, obviously I've been a Christian for 30-something years. We've had people here for many, many years more and people for less. But help us remember, Lord, the joy of our salvation. Please help us to remember that we know who holds the future and you do hold us in your hand. And thank you that we know, Lord, even in our darkest days, help us to remember and stand firm on the fact that you do have a plan. Amen.